Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and we have a really interesting show lined up for you today with Dr. Joanne Messenger from Australia, and we'll be meeting her in just a moment. Before we do that, I just wanted to tell you that the sponsor of our show is the VHL Family Alliance, and we put together this show because we've learned a lot about living with complex medical conditions, and we wanted to share that and to learn from other people's experiences as well. So this is a place where we bring on topics of interest to people with complex medical conditions or disabilities, and we hope that you'll find some good material here that will be helpful to you in your life. And today's program is actually applicable to just about everybody on the planet. So, but before we start the show, I wanted to play you some information about VHL, which stands for von Hippel-Lindau disease. It's a genetic cancer syndrome. So listen, please, and we'll be right back.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Thanks, and welcome back to our show. And at this point, I'd like to introduce Dr. Joanne Messenger. Hello, Dr. Messenger.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. It's morning in Melbourne,
oh,
Australia.
Yes, good afternoon. I beg your pardon. Good afternoon for you.
No problem. I think lots of people are going to be listening to this later anyway, because we have a lot of people who listen to it as a podcast. So, Dr. Messenger has a new book out called Be in One Piece, P-E-A-C-E, Essential Skills for Thriving in the New World. Could you tell us what motivated you to write this book?
I'm a practitioner, and I've worked with people for the past 30 years with a myriad of complaints, some of them incredibly challenging and others not so much. And I found myself repeating the same things over and over and over with information that some people knew and some people just didn't know at all. And I found that rather than keep saying the same things over and over, it's like write it down. Because sometimes when you repeat back information to people, right, because you know what it is, there can be an assumption that they know what it is as well. So I wanted it to be really clear of some of the steps that people can take to help make their lives more comfortable, more healthy, more energetic, and pretty much more aligned with their spiritual purpose, why they're here in the first place.
That's great. And you're a chiropractor?
I am a chiropractor, although I guess that I was only a normal chiropractor for a very short time, because I had the incidents very early in my practice to meet some really interesting people, people who worked with energy and people who could see auras, and it was very, very blessed for me to meet such people so early in my life, because it encouraged me to learn about herbs and flower essences and energy and meditation and a whole bunch of things that I might not normally have been exposed to.
Yes, and one of the premises that you put out in your press release was that pain can be a good thing. And there are a lot of people listening who are going to groan at that, I think. So tell us what you mean when you say that.
Me too. Just because it's good doesn't mean we like it. You know, brushing sprouts
right.
are good doesn't mean we have to like it. Pain is the body's way of telling us that something's wrong. And most of us know that. It's just that for the past, especially 50 years, we've become in the Western world a very medicated society. If something hurts, then we take the pain away. So if it's a medical condition, we'll do it with drugs or surgery even. Or if it's an emotional condition, we'll do it with alcohol or sugar or cigarettes or depending on your budget, cocaine or whatever else. It seems to be like we've become very intolerant of pain. We just want it to go away. And if we don't listen to the whispers, we get the screams. If we don't listen to what the body's saying, it has to create more and more pain to get our attention to show us what we're doing that's caused that pain in the first place. So if we can learn to listen to the body and understand what it's saying, then we can stop doing what it is that's causing that pain initially.
So how do we find that out? Because oftentimes, as you say, we're very medicated. We go and we say, I hurt, I want it not to hurt. So the first thing we do is pop a pill, even at home before we go to see the doctor. And then, of course, that can complicate the diagnosis of what it is really underneath that. Because, as you say, pain is a message. It's telling us it's time to do something. But then how do we know what to do?
Well, this is partly why I've written the book, to explain what means what. For instance, if you have pains in your shoulders, and a lot of people who are stressed and sensitive get that pain across the top of their shoulders. And it's like if you even look at the word, this might be easy if people write it down. If you write out shoulders, S-H-O-U-L-D-E-R-S, if you just put a little hyphen in there between the D and E, it's should-ers. So when we're going, I should do this, I should do that, it puts tension in our shoulders. Like even the word tells us what the issue is that puts that tension in our shoulders. So whenever we're going, I should, or they should, good luck with that one, they should do something, then it's like, well, if you really should do something, do it. Stop saying you will and get on and do it. If you're saying you should do something and you have no intention of doing it in the first place, well, be more honest with yourself and stop saying that you should. Align with what you're really choosing to do.
Right. So sometimes, though, if you have pain in your shoulder, it really might mean there's something wrong with your heart. It might mean that there's something wrong in some other part of your body, and it could also be just stress. So how do we know what doctor to go to and to really get to the seat of the problem?
I figure go by the intensity of the pain. If the pain's really intense, you go to the hospital or your doctor or whoever you can get to, your chiropractor, whoever you have an affinity with that you know that you can help, you go there first. And if it's a more mild pain, if it's less intense, then start being your own detective. You know, is it an emotional cause? Is it a physical cause? Like if it's the shoulders, for instance, is it because I'm should? Or is it because there's an underlying heart condition or whatever? And this is where the more aware we become of our bodies and what's right for us and what's atypical for us, the more we can follow that path through. Like say for instance, and the more you can learn about your energy and the blueprint for your body, because just as we have our physical body, we have our energy bodies as well. And most people have heard of the aura, but we tend to think of it as like a nebulous flowing of energy, whereas in truth it's very structured, just like the structure for a large building. You have the blueprint for the bricks, the concrete, you have a blueprint for the plumbing, a blueprint for the electrical wiring and the decor. Same for our bodies. We have blueprints for the bones, for the blood supply, for the gland and hormone systems, and for our beliefs and our attitudes. So If you can work backwards from the blueprint to what the symptoms are, or vice versa, from the symptoms back to where the issue is in the blueprint, it can help to get more clarity around what's causing it. So say, mm-hmm. for instance, if you have a pain between the back of the shoulders, you know, between your shoulder blades, if you have pain there, then this is actually at the back of your heart chakra, the heart center. And when the pain is in the back, in the spine somewhere, it's the things that we haven't dealt with, the things that we've put back there. It's too hard, or we're too busy, or we don't know what it is, we don't know what to do about it, or don't want to do what needs doing about it. Then we'll put it back there, we'll store it in our spine. So the area of the spine can tell us what the issue is. So say, for instance, if it's between the shoulder blades, it's behind the heart. So it can be a forgiveness issue. You need to forgive somebody for something that we're still blaming them for or hanging on. Or it can be a physical heart problem or something to do with an organ in the chest, which is also the lungs. So depending on whereabouts the issue is in the spine, it can tell you what the corresponding issue is in the body. So if this is why I've written the book, if you learn to read what the signs mean, then it's much easier for you to work out the underlying emotional and attitude problems as well as the physical mm-hmm. conditions.
Yes, and always we operate on multiple levels every day, so that there's what's going on in your physical body and what's going on in your emotional body, and they're both happening at the same time. So it sometimes is difficult to sort that out. But if we work on managing our stress on a day-to-day level, then hopefully these emotional things won't get out of control. Is that true?
Yes, I agree. And I think that's a really sensible way to approach things. I think if you just look at the physical things and ignore the emotional things and beliefs, then sooner or later the wheels are going to wobble. And if you ignore the physical body, you know, if you don't exercise and eat good nutrition and all you do is concentrate on the emotional things and feeling good, then the wheels can fall off there as well. It's like you need to pay attention to all of the different aspects of health.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, usually.
Right.
You know, it's depending on what's happening in your body determines the ease of commitment. You know, if you're feeling generally pretty good, then you might not be as committed to meditating and eating green vegetables and whatever as somebody who has a serious life-challenging disease. The people that I've worked with that have had serious conditions going on in their body, it's been a really easy commitment for them to go, okay, I need to do this. You know, if I'm choosing life and this is what I need to do, then I'm happy to do it.
Right. So what are some of the major stress management things that you recommend for people to start with? Because some of the things that you mentioned take a huge commitment, and most people are not ready to make that commitment on day one. So where does one start?
I figure the easiest and the cheapest thing to start with, because it's free, is good old breathing. And I know this sounds very cliche and simple, but, you know, it's popular and it's common because it's the truth. It stood the test of time. Whenever we're stressed, in fact, pay attention. You know, what are you doing with your breathing right now? If it's really sort of shallow and high up in your body, then chances are you might be more stressed than what you realise, or you might actually realise it. The more relaxed we are, the deeper, the slower, the further down our body we tend to breathe. And when we're stressed, we tend to breathe more shallowly or even hold our breath. And even how are we breathing? Are we breathing through our nose or are we breathing through our mouth? Because when we're stressed, we'll tend to breathe through our mouth. We're trying to get as much oxygen into the body as we can, as fast as we can. Whereas when we're feeling more relaxed, we'll breathe in through our nose. So it's like we can use that in reverse rather than just let our breathing run its own way. It's like we can start to control it and breathe through our nose, breathe deeper, breathe slower, And that relaxes the body instantly and costs nothing. You don't have to go to any expert. You can start doing that right now. And
you can teach it to somebody over the telephone. You can even teach it to someone over the telephone, which is what I like about it. You know, because I'll be talking to somebody and you can hear that their breathing is tight and high and rapid, and you can just talk them down out of it.
Exactly, and it's instant. It's not something that, well, you'll feel better in 2 days' time. It's instant. It actually changes it. And it fascinates me how creative we can get with our breathing. I've done a lot of sports, and in particular swimming. I'm a good swimmer, and yet I found that if I was really stressed about something, I could even hold my breath when I was swimming. And it's like, that makes no sense at all. It's like our body will do whatever it needs to do to get our attention.
Right, right.
And so as well as breathing, people can change their nutrition really easily. You know, in our world, certainly in the United States and Canada and Europe, Australia, it's like in our Western countries, we generally have access to amazing variety of good quality foods. So it comes down to choice, you know. Are you going to choice the foods today, right now, that you know your body needs, or go for the poorer quality foods that don't have as much energetic and nutritional value? It's simply a choice. And we always, always, always feel better long term when we have the good stuff. You know, if we go for the short term quick fix, it might instantly feel good if we have a big sugar boost or caffeine boost or whatever, but once that wears off, then, you know, it runs amok. So then you end up wanting more and more and more, and the spiral can get out of control. But at any point, it's like you can take it back. You can start driving the bus again. You can choose wisely. And exercise.
One of the things that popped into my mind as you were speaking is that caffeine, for example, people drink caffeine to stay awake. But, of course, the underlying problem is they didn't get enough sleep. And what will happen with caffeine or sugar or any of those things is there's a rebound effect. And so in the short term, it may make you more awake, but then it's going to clobber you. You know, it's like, you will go to sleep now.
And clobber you in proportion to what's going on. And this is one of the things in my book as well, is managing your energy budget. Because, like you said, if you're craving that caffeine, you either need more sleep or you need to meditate. It's like basically there's more energy going out than what's coming in. So it's like in my book, I'm teaching people to start looking at where is your energy going. Because it's like your budget, you know. You've got so much money for your groceries, for your mortgage, your rent, for your car registration, for your cinema tickets, your clothes. And if you start overspending your money, you can end up financially bankrupt. And same with your energy. You've got so much energy for movement, for digestion, for motivation in your career. And if you start overspending your energy, say you're really worried about a friend who's having problems, if you start overspending your energy in something like that, then you can end up energetically bankrupt. So one of the chapters is what to do about that, how to cut those cords of energy that you're giving out to people or situations that are whittling your energy away.
Very good. So what kinds of exercise things do you recommend people do?
As in physical exercise or exercise to cut those energy cords?
Well, either one. Go ahead, take it wherever you wish.
Both.
All right. So
to cut those energy cords, I'm a really practical person. I figure do what works, you know. So with the energy cords, it's like, and I go into detail in this book, there's many different ways, and I figure people are different. Some people respond to some ways and not others. So it's like find what works for you best. So I liken it to, you know, the old telephone exchanges before we went digital, where you'd have the nice lady at the exchange and they'd plug you into the switchboard and connect you up when you wanted to speak to somebody. It's like that with our energy. From our solar plexus, from our abdomen, when we're talking to somebody or caring about them, and even if we're caring about them in a not-so-loving way, if we're irritated with somebody, we're still giving out those cords of energy and we plug into them. So the natural way is when you're interacting with somebody, the energy cord plugs in and then it falls away afterwards. But if we keep feeding that cord with our thoughts, oh, golly, I hope they're okay. Oh, what are they going to do with the kids? How are they going to afford this? Or what am I going to do in my career? Whenever we're perpetuating an energy cord with our thoughts, it gets bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger. And sometimes it can't fall away if we keep feeding it. So in the book, I explain how to cut those cords of energy without then just leaking it all over the place. You know, it's like clamp those cords off and cut in between where the clamps are, like a tourniquet, and cut those cords of energy so that you've got it back in, so that you're not leaking your energy out to things that aren't productive. And I'm not saying don't care about people. I'm just saying care about people in a useful way. Don't just whittle your energy away and waste it. And back to the other part of the question, what physical exercise? Do what you like. You know, if you love to run, go for a run. If you like to dance, dance. If you like to go to yoga, do yoga. If you're incapacitated and you can't get out of your chair, wriggle your fingers in time with the music on the radio, or whatever it is that you like to do and can do. Because if it's something that feels like a punishment, well, you know, what's the point of that? It just sets up a resentment somewhere else. It's like, make it fun. Right. Life's serious enough. It's like, let's lighten it up a bit and make it a bit more fun, a bit more enjoyable.
Now, in your practice, what kinds of, I see you have some classes and things like that, or sessions with people. What kinds of sessions do you do?
In my practice, I do one-on-one sessions, so people come and see me for a variety of reasons. Most people start off coming because they have an issue, whether they've had a diagnosis of diabetes or cancer or sore left ankle or whatever. I see people with anything, everything really. But once they've been working with me for a while and they start to respond and get their life back again, then I see a lot of people who just want to stay well, you know, get well, stay well. And then I find I like to empower people, you know. It's like, what is it that they really want to do while they're here on earth? As well as their health, what about their emotional health? You know, are they happy in their relationships? How can they relate with people better? How can they relate with themselves better, be more kind to themselves and others? And their fulfillment, what's their spiritual purpose? What is it that makes them feel good about participating as a human being on the planet? So that's what I do with the one-on-one sessions. And I run courses teaching people blueprint healing. So whether people are practitioners of something else or if they've never been a practitioner of any kind and they just want to be able to work with their energy in a, I guess, in a results-driven way. Because there's a lot of energy techniques out there and all are not equal. It's like the cleaners in your household. The shampoo you might wash your hair with is not going to clean the oven. The cleaners in your house are not equal. And same with energy healing techniques. They're not equal. You know, some just might be very nice, but if you've got a serious issue or a challenge, you want the stuff that works. You want the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and different issues sometimes take a different approach. Is that not true?
Yes, very much. And different personalities, you know, different issues, different personalities. I find with most people that come to see me, they just want to know what to do and how to do it. I know in other people's practices, I hear sometimes that they have people come in that don't actually want to get well. And fortunately for me, I tend to not see those people. I'm really grateful that the people that seem to find me are the ones that just want to know how, you know, like show me what to do, how do I do it, yeah.
Yes, one of the things they often talk about in psychiatric practice in particular is that some people are just comfortable with their neuroses, you know.
Yes.
they know what it's like to be this way, and they're uncomfortable trying something else. So I think, as you point out, one of the first things to ask yourself is, am I ready to change? Do I want to change anything?
Yes.
Because there are times in our life when sometimes we just can't imagine taking on the stress of making something different.
Yes. And plus, too, it's like when something is out of balance in our life, again, it takes a lot of energy. So for us to, and that can be a very noble way of not doing something else. Like, for instance, if there's something that you've always wanted to do in your life, but it was a bit scary, it's like, yes. Well, being sick or incapacitated could be a really noble way of not doing that, not stepping up to the plate and having the courage to take steps to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that's not the case in all situations. But it can be there. It's like live an examined life. Why do you have the things that you do? And if you can do something about it, then you have a responsibility to yourself to go resolve whatever the issues are. It's like take back your power and have a fun life, have an empowering life. It's so much more enjoyable than being incapacitated because of headaches or fear or pain.
Well, and as you say, it will probably only get worse. If there's an underlying problem and you're not addressing it, you can count on it that it's going to get worse. So do you really want it to go from bad? Yeah. Do you really want it to go from bad to worse, or are you ready to do something to address the problem? And sometimes the medical system doesn't always cooperate with this, too. So it's one of the reasons I asked you, how do you find a good starting place in the medical system? And it would be interesting to get your take on it from Australia. So if I go to my general practitioner, is that person the first tier of trying to understand whether I need a heart doctor or an osteopath or, you know, what is it, a bone problem, a muscle problem, a heart problem, who knows? And as a consumer, you don't really know which of the specialists you might need. You need someone to be your traffic cop, your first tier of trying to sort this out.
Yes. And there's always exceptions to the rule, but I always figure your best traffic cop is you. It's like innately we have that quiet voice inside that really does give us the intuition of where to go and who to see. And I always figure, I talk to myself, or I talk to my inner guidance or my guardian angels or whatever label you want to put on them, and I just go, show me, show me, show me. If I have an issue, it's like, okay, show me. What am I doing that's creating this? If I need to see somebody else, it's like, show me who I need to see. Bring that person into my awareness. So I might talk to my friends or my colleagues and go, this and this and this is happening, who would you recommend? Oh, well, I know someone who had that and they went to this person and they had great results. So it's like oftentimes within your own circle of influence, it's like somebody will know somebody who's had the same issue or a similar issue and can recommend the avenue to go. And it's like always ask, just, you know, ask the professionals. And also, too, don't wait to get sick in the first place. It's like go to the preventative practitioners like chiropractors, naturopaths, massage therapists, so that then if an ailment crops up, it's like they're likely to be able to give you guidance as to what to do and where to go and what books to read and what courses to do. And I figure do it all. It's like do as much as you can yourself, you know, accept personal responsibility for what you've created. And if you don't like what you've created, well, do something about changing it, because you'll just get more of it if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And also see the practitioners that you can help. But I consistently find word of mouth is often the best way. You know, there will be somebody that will know who you should go to that can help. I find that most of the people that come see me are referred by other people. Somebody got results, so they'll send somebody else and send somebody else.
Right.
That word of mouth is fabulous.
Right. It does help, though, now that we have things like medical imaging, to know when you need to go and get some pictures of what's going on the inside, and not spend too much time trying to do only the preventive things when you've already got a problem brewing. It could be that there's something that really does need to be addressed medically. So we should caution people not to rely totally on it. But it plays a very, very useful complementary role with any condition. To be managing your stress is really terribly important, because when you're under a lot of stress, there are chemical changes in your body that can kick off other problems and make you hyper, change your personality, change the way you react when something goes wrong at work or in your marriage, and can really begin to play badly with your relationships. So it's best to manage your stress from the get-go. 20 years ago, we used to say, oh, you should avoid stress. And one woman said to me, well, I don't want to divorce my husband. It's like, you know, for her, getting out of stress was getting out of her marriage. And it's like, no. You know,
I think most people have been divorced, like, question that, because there's a lot of stress involved with an old divorce.
Absolutely, yeah. So we start with, okay, this is a relationship you've got. Can we make it work a little bit better for you and for the other person as well, I'm sure.
Yes. And plus, too, it's like sometimes the stress itself isn't the problem, but rather how we react to it. Because you can have a bunch of people under the same stress, and some people get sick and miserable, and other people get exhausted, and someone else with that same stress can even thrive. You know, it's like some people, when they're met with a challenge, it's like they have that ability to go, well, okay, what is this stimulating me on to do? Like, say, for instance, I'm showing my age group here now, but I don't know if you remember the great Australian swimmer, Kieran Perkins. He won gold medals at Olympics and world records. And he didn't even start swimming until he was 12 years old. He was running and ran through a plate glass window and cut his leg really badly. And part of the healing process was his practitioner told him to get in the pool and go swimming. Well, he swam and he swam and he swam. So in order to heal his leg, he ended up a world champion swimmer, the best in his day. So, you know, it's like sometimes stress, sometimes that challenge can be the very thing that gets us back on a particular track to go do something wonderful. And I find that for a lot of disease situations and conditions, a lot of people, when they find out what they need to do to help heal themselves, then they can then pass that knowledge on to help other people with the same situation, much like you're doing with your website and your program and your alliance. Mm-hmm. It's like what started off as a challenging thing, now you're helping so many people that you might never have come across if it hadn't been for those early challenges.
Right. A lot of people say, oh, I could never do that. And all I can say is we do what we have to do. You know, as you say, once you're presented with the challenge, it's sort of sink or swim. So you're going to swim, fine. Then you have to figure out a way to do that. But again, stress, as you say, can be a good thing. It can be challenging. But there's a certain point when it becomes distress and it really becomes very negative and is making all those negative chemical changes in your body. So we need to balance the the challenge part, which we all need, you know, we all need, I find myself, if I don't have enough stress in my life, I tend to create it. So I have this modicum of stress that I sort of need, and I know that about myself. I'll sign up for a class or I'll do something else, you know. But so there's a certain amount that we need to keep ourselves sharp and keep ourselves challenged. But we can't overdo that.
Yeah, yeah, it's that balance, isn't it? It's like with the Great Barrier Reef in Australia off the coast of Queensland is that gorgeous natural wonder of the world, the Great Barrier Reef. And on the protected side, on the side of the reef that's closest to the land, it is just so pretty, you know, the delicate colours of the coral and the gorgeous fish. And on the outside of the reef, the side of the reef that's open to the pounding of the Pacific Ocean, it's like it's tough and strong and not so pretty, but it's just so incredibly strong, the coral and the fish that reside there. So it's like the stronger the stress, the stronger we respond to that. And in our own lives, if we have that out of balance where there's too much stress, well, we need to start balancing it out by doing the things that naturally have those chemical changes that make our body feel better. Because just as stress triggers off the chemical changes, so does laughing. You know, laughing sets off good endorphins. If you're doing exercise that you like, it sets off good endorphins. It's like start balancing it out with the things that create positive chemical changes as well.
Right. Very good. So what would you recommend to people who are finding themselves in a situation with they know that they have multiple things going on in their bodies and in addition to whatever Western medical things they may be doing for this, what sorts of complementary things? You said choose something that you like to do, that's a given, but you mentioned some of the modalities that we might choose from. So there's chiropractic.
I think it first up, Joyce, buy my book.
Oh, of course.
It's the first avenue.
We booked this in a week. And we booked this only a week ago, so I didn't have chance to read your book, but I've been reading a little bit about it on the internet. So go ahead, tell us.
Start with my book, because that is a comprehensive area of simple and practical things that people can do to help themselves. And like I said earlier, I'm a really practical person. It doesn't bother me how fancy something is. My question is, does it work? And does it work for me? And is
right.
it going to work for that person or that person or that person? Because different things work better for different people. So we need to have a variety
right.
of options. You know,
there are people who think it's fun to go run 20 miles, and that person is not me. So, you know.
Yes, there are other people who go, just forget it, that's torture. Yes, so you
right.
need to do things that are in alignment with your personality, and that doesn't mean don't do something that can really help you just because you don't like it. It's like if something is a little bit challenging and it's going to get you well, we'll do it anyway. You know, maybe running 20 miles sounds absolutely horrific, but you can walk 500 yards or you can walk to the front gate and back. You know, you can walk to the bus. It's like it doesn't have to be the extreme of something. But my experience is the more enjoyable we make it, the more we change our attitude around something, the more pleasurable it is, the more we're likely to keep doing it. So, you know, that's the key. Find what you like. Find the practitioner that you like.
Right.
Find
a good
the
place
people
for networking.
That you can trust.
Right. So
yes.
Your friend may already have the person that you're looking for. So ask about
exactly.
that.
Yeah. And this is a generic statement, but pretty much everything that's on the planet, somebody else has already found the solution for it. For most
right.
things. You know, if you've got asthma, somebody on the planet's already worked out how to resolve it. Go find out those people. You know, not the ones that are just medicating and that's all. It's like the people that have resolved it, what did they do? Because maybe that can help you too. You know, the people who have cancer or diabetes or back pain or pancreatitis or whatever. What did the people do that already resolved it? You know, the people in life that are happy and chirpy, what are they doing that is keeping them happy and chirpy? Because maybe if you do those things, then you can be happy and chirpy too. Somebody's already resolved. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. It's like, go find what works and do that.
Well, you mentioned aromatherapy on your website. And this also seems to me to be a very personal kind of thing, because even though certain aromas may relax or excite certain people, there are also genetic differences amongst us. And what some people consider perfume, to me it smells like benzene, you know, because I'm sensitive to hydrocarbons. And so this woman came into my office the other day, and she was wearing this perfume that absolutely smelled to me like benzene. And she was bragging about her new perfume, and I was like, "Oh, good! I'm glad you think so." But again, that's aromatherapy may or may not work for people. But what's your experience with it?
I find the people that work for and the people that like it, it can be miraculous. And for people that have no affinity with it at all, or even repulsed by it, forget it. It's not for them. Mm-hmm. Go find what's for them. Yeah, yeah.
But if perfume smells like benzene to you, let me give you a clue for the people out there who are having this
experience.
There's
a real good clue
In some of the modern perfumes, they're putting a hydrocarbon propellant. And it's that hydrocarbon propellant that I smell first and that totally turns me off. But they're putting it in order for this perfume to inject itself into the air around you and make you smell all wonderful. Mm. But people who are sensitive to things like that, it really annoys them.
Yeah, I find that's really good. I think that's fantastic. That's your body's way of saying that's not for me. So
right,
I think that's excellent that you react like that, that your body's saying, that's not for me. So no matter how good somebody else says it is, no matter how wonderful the advertising campaign is, listen to yourself. It's like, that is not for you.
Is to choose a natural product. If you choose a natural product, it's not going to have the hydrocarbon propellant in it, and it's more likely to be a little more expensive, because it is more expensive to make things from real flowers. But I think you'll find it's more subtle and more pleasant too.
More subtle, more pleasant, better quality, better energy, and for most people, that's fantastic. And even there'll be some people that the natural product isn't right for either. You know, just because something's natural doesn't mean you should have it. You know, cow's milk is natural. A lot of people can't drink cow's milk. A brown snake is natural. Doesn't mean it's good for you.
This is true. Okay. And you mentioned here, are you on a committed spiritual journey? Tell us a little about that.
I really feel that we're all here for a purpose. And I guess my name is a bit of a clue to my purpose. You know, my surname is Messenger. I don't think that's an accident. I feel that one of my jobs is to pass on the messages to people. The things that I have found that have worked for myself, work for other people, it's like maybe they can work for other people that don't know about what my message is yet. So I feel it's my responsibility to offer the knowledge that I've accumulated over all these years to shortcut somebody else's journey. You know, like if somebody is giving a challenging diagnosis today, and it's all new, well, I figure if I already know what they need to do, well, you know, come and get the knowledge from me or whoever else has the knowledge. It's like you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If somebody already knows how to do it, ask them. And I guess that's what I mean by the committed spiritual journey, that alignment with our purpose, what it is that we're here to do in the first place. And some people think that, oh, that sounds serious and responsible and burdensome, and not at all. I find when people find their purpose, usually they're quite passionate about it because it's what they enjoy. It's what they're naturally good at. And that doesn't mean that naturally good at doesn't mean automatic. It's like if somebody is an excellent teacher, it doesn't mean that they started off an excellent teacher. You know, they might have had to have classes to learn how to teach. Yeah, somebody might be a gifted doctor, but they weren't. They were born that way, but they had to take classes on how to be a doctor. If somebody's a gifted entertainer, well, they took singing lessons and acting lessons. We still need to polish the gifts that we've got, the tools that we've got. So some people might think, I don't know what my purpose is because they just haven't taken the classes to polish what their basic ingredients are yet.
Or simply to explore what the options are. I think, you know, when my son was applying to college, I remember one of the colleges was saying that being an undergraduate student is just to broaden your vision, to help you learn how to learn and find out what there is out there. And it's after you've seen that, then you can begin to choose. But as a high school student, you really don't know what the options are. And, you know, when they were saying to him, well, what career do you want to choose? And I said to him, you know, that what you wind up doing for a living may not have been invented yet. Because that was true for me. When I went to college, there were no courses in computer science. I mean, you had to be seriously into zeros and ones over at the engineering school to do anything with a computer in those days, right? And now what it used to take a whole room full of computing and three air conditioners to do, now you can buy for $5 at the drugstore. So, you know, it's an amazing explosion in technology, and there will be similar explosions in technology in other fields. But find something that challenges you, that interests you, and do it. And sometimes, as you say, people are sitting at home feeling sorry for themselves and, you know, with very real physical impairments, but that doesn't mean your life is over. It just means your life is going to be more challenging, which you can take as a challenge, or you can take it as a way of defeating yourself before you get off the ground.
I agree. You know, there's so many jobs now that didn't even exist 10 years ago. So over the next 10 years, it makes sense that there'll be other jobs come in that we don't know about yet. And how exciting is that? And I feel this is part of the need for us to regain our sense of community as well. So say, for instance, if you have a person who is in a wheelchair or whatever, is incapacitated in some way, they can even set up a business internet, business now. So if they can team up with somebody who can package up their products, whatever they are, and ship them out to the world, well, how good is that? You know, if we can start to work together, if I'm really good at something and not good at something else, we'll find somebody who fills that gap. So we're all doing what we're good at, pool our resources, pool our gifts and our talents so that we work together so that we're mostly doing what we like to do. And there's some things that we do need to do. So say, for instance, if you don't like to cook, you need to team up with somebody who can or eat out all the time or change your attitude and at least like to cook a bit because you need to eat, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It doesn't mean necessarily just stop doing everything you don't like. It's like sometimes just a little attitude shift can change the enjoyment level of it.
Great. Well, this has been wonderful. I appreciate your joining us from Australia. And sorry about the mild time lag that we've had to deal with, but I think we did pretty well with that. But there'll be little gaps here and there just so everybody understands what we were doing. But thank you. It's been delightful speaking with you. Is there anything you'd like to add
before we
take off? And we should also give a plug to your book again. So where can people get it? Let's see. BN1P.
They can get it from the usual places like bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or they can get it directly from my website, which is drjoannemessenger.com. And from there, they can get the information about my courses that I offer as well. So it's books and courses. There's natural products that people can select that might help them on their journey, and the information is all there. And meditations that they can download. I'm very about where you need help, go get it. You know, if there's something that you need, if you need a surgery, please don't do that yourself. Go to somebody who does it all the time.
No, that's right.
But for the things
no
that
one
you
need
can
an
do...
Yes,
but yes. For the things that you can do, you can breathe, you can meditate. The things that you can do, well, start doing it. Because if it makes you feel better, then you you smile more. When you smile more, the people around you smile more. And, you know, if we really want to make the world a better place, then it starts with us.
For sure. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Joanne Messenger, and... the book, again, is Be in One Piece, P-E-A-C-E, and it's available, as she said, from Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and also from her website, which is Dr. Joanne, J-O-A-N-N-E, Messenger, M-E-S-S-E-N-G-E-R, and that's all with no periods or anything. So drjoannemessenger.com. And thank you, everybody, for being with us today, and we'll be here next week as well. Our schedule's a tiny bit erratic in the summer, so please forgive me if I take a week off once in a while. But anyway, I hope I'll see you again, if not next week, the week after. And meanwhile, definitely be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks, everybody. Bye.